ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय इति व्यवसिता राजन् हरयस्व
एकचेतसा
प्रययुस्
तम्
परिक्रम्य पन्थानम् अनिवर्तनम् इति व्यवसिता राजन् हरयस्व
एकचेतसा
प्रययुस्थम् परिक्रम्य हन्तानम् अनिवर्ततम् इति व्यवसिता राजन् हरयस्व
एकचेतसा
प्रययुस्थम् परिक्रम्य हन्तानम् अनिवर्तनम् इति व्यवसिता राजन् हरयस्व एकचेतसा प्रययुस्थम् परिक्रम्य हन्तानम् अनिवर्तनम् of Narad Muni.
Rajan,
O King,
Haryasva,
the sons of Prajapati Daksha,
Ekachetasa,
all being of the same opinion, Prayuhu, left, Tam,
Narad Muni.
Parikramya, circumambulating. Pantanam, on the path. Anivartanam,
which does not bring one back again.
To
to this material world. Translation.
Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear king, after hearing the instructions of Narada, the Haryasvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were firmly convinced. They all believed in his instructions and reached the same conclusion. Having accepted him as the spiritual master, they circumambulated that great sage and followed the path by which one never returns to this world." Report. From this verse, we can understand the meaning of initiation and the duties of a disciple and spiritual master. The spiritual master never instructs his disciple, "Take a mantra from me, pay me some money, and by practicing this yoga system, you will become very expert in materialistic life." This is not the duty of a spiritual master. Rather, the spiritual master teaches the disciple how to give up materialistic life. And the disciple's duty is to assimilate his instructions and ultimately follow the path back home, back to Godhead, from whence no one returns to this material world. After hearing the instructions of Narada Muni, the Haryasvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, decided not to be entangled in materialistic life by begetting hundreds of children and having to take care of them. This would have been unnecessarily entangling. The Haryasvas did not consider pious and impious activities. Their materialistic father had instructed them to increase the population. But because the words of Narada Muni, they could not heed that instruction. Narada Muni, as their spiritual master, gave them the Shastric instructions that they should give up this material world, and as bona fide disciples, they followed his instructions. One should not endeavor to wander to different planetary systems within this universe. For even if one goes to the topmost planetary system, Brahmaloka, one must return again. Chine punya martya lokam vishanti. The endeavors of karmis are a useless waste of time. One should endeavor to return home, back to Godhead. This is the perfection of life, as the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 8:16. Abhama bhuvanal loka punar avartinor jina. Mam upetya tukonteya. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. So here is a discussion on the actual position of the living entity, who the actual father is, what the actual duties are. And so we see here is a very perfect example of this. So in the scriptures they give various meanings. A verse will have its direct meaning, its indirect meanings, its hidden meanings. And none of them are incompatible with each other. It's just a matter of the depth of one's understanding. So now Narada Muni understands completely what is the full purpose of the scriptures, what the scriptures are actually trying to tell us, and what is the real benefit of the living entity. So here he gives that the purpose is that one should go back to Godhead. That is the purpose in life. One should not waste one's time in karma and jnana. So the Haryasvas, they understood this. And having understood this, then they have now taken the instructions of the spiritual master very seriously. So they're because of their qualification, they're able to understand the full depth of the instruction. So the living entity in the material world, he has to become convinced of what is the ultimate purpose of life. And to that degree that he has that faith, then one can engage on that platform of devotional service. And as the faith is not so developed,
then one needs to cultivate that faith, that understanding. So then we see here that the bona fide spiritual master is then training in what is the actual purpose, the ultimate purpose. So we see this purpose here is going back to Godhead. So even though their father had instructed them to follow their culture, the Vedic culture, very nicely, and to populate the universe, and in this way perform their duties, then they'll please their father, they'll please their grandfather, and in this way they'll also create for themselves a future ideal situation. But then Narad Muni, he pointed out that, yes, you must follow the instruction of your father, right? One must follow Guru. So in following, then they are working for their benefit, the benefit of the universe, populating the universe. But it's a matter of now which universe will populate, right? Prajapati Daksha was not specific. He didn't say, you have to populate this particular universe. So now, by going back to Godhead, they will further populate the spiritual realm. So population is going on. But now it's just how they understand the Father, because ultimately Krishna is the Father. Krishna is the Guru. Krishna is the Mother. He is the friend. So following his instruction is the actual goal of human life. The human being must follow the gurus, the parents, the teachers, spiritual masters. All these, their business is to help the living entity go back to Godhead. So this must be done. Yes. So here, Prabhupada mentioned, rather the spiritual master teaches the disciples how to give up materialistic life. And the disciple's duty is to assimilate his instructions and ultimately follow the path back home, back to Godhead, from whence no one returns to this material world. So this is the purpose of the parental rasa, is that when one starts to become conscious, then one's first guru, the mother, she starts to teach the path back to Godhead. She teaches how to properly behave in society, how to interface with others properly, that we are devotees of Krishna, that our business is to serve Krishna, and, you know, so many ways how we can properly behave. Then, with time, then the father becomes prominent or starts to become noticed by the child. And as his consciousness is raised, and that same instruction is taken further. More the discipline, more the control of the senses, the duties, responsibilities, all this naturally then pays the next step. And then, when one comes in contact with seniors and the spiritual master, and they're all saying the same thing. Now, depending upon the qualification of the student, then they can take the instructions to different levels. Because the ultimate level is to go back to Godhead. Then if one can't go back to Godhead immediately, then one should follow the path that will get one back to Godhead immediately. And if one has difficulty in that, then one must follow those paths that help us come to the platform of goodness so that we can go back, we can take the process to go back to Godhead seriously. So the student must situate himself somewhere in this path. It's just a matter of whether it's the beginning, the middle, or the end. But this is what's going on. And in the Vedic culture, this was the relationship between all of the teachers. Now we see here is because Prajapati Daksha is not that realized. Otherwise, he would understand if the purpose of the universe is to give the living entities the opportunity to go back to Godhead, then he would have understood that these sons of his were so highly qualified that in this lifetime they could get back to Godhead without having to go through all the different aspects of the Varnashram system to purify themselves, to remove themselves of material desire. They were already removed of it. They didn't have it. Then he would have thought, yes, this is perfect. Okay, so now they can follow this path and give example to the others in the universe. Because you can't have a proper system unless you also have those who are living Brahminical lifestyle, giving the example, giving the instructions. Then it becomes perfect. But because he's somehow or another become very focused on his own particular thing just to fill it up with bodies, the universe, he's missed the point of the scriptures. It means he's missed the point of what is Krishna wanting the universe for. The universe is for going back to Godhead. So depending upon what situation you're in, then you will take that aspect of the process that fits oneself. If in the process one finds that one needs to go through the Grihastha Ashram, then that is still for the purpose of going back to Godhead. Right? One has to be slightly in illusion to think that there's some other purpose. It means that the Grihastha Ashram itself, what Pradapati Daksha was recommending, was so that one could understand that satisfaction is not coming from the material relationship, but is coming from the service to the Lord and engaging our senses and emotions in the Lord's service. Then one is freed from these aspects. Now when one is performing an activity for oneself, one is becoming bound. You perform the same activity where the fruit is not ours but is Krishna's. One becomes free. So this means that for ourselves we may speculate how to please ourselves. But to please Krishna, Krishna doesn't leave a whole lot of room for speculation. He says, you do like this. You eat like this, sleep like this, mate like this, defend like this. You perform these activities, you want to do these activities. You have this conditioning, do it for me. This is the way to do it, and do it for me. Then one is purified. So, if one understands that this is actually what's going on in the universe, then we would find that Prajapati Daksha would have been very happy if he understood this. And he would see, okay, I was planning to produce sons that had the conditioning that they needed to go through the Grihastha Ashram, so that they could then, from going through Grihastha Ashram, they could perfect their life. And then after that, go back to Godhead. But now he finds that he has produced sons that don't have to go through it. They're nice sticker brahmacharis. So he would also should be happy. The same goal is obtained. Whether you obtain it in one way or the other, that doesn't matter. Krishna doesn't look like that. The acharyas don't look like that. That's why Prabhupada always doesn't make a great distinction in the various varnas and ashrams. When it comes to going back to Godhead, from any position, one can go. As long as one accepts the duties of that position and does those duties for Krishna's satisfaction, then any position can take one back to Godhead. But if one doesn't understand this, then one tends to take the externals of the situation and take those as very important. And by that, one becomes bewildered, like Prajapati Daksha. He somehow or another just got caught up in just producing children, that's enough. But that's not guru. Guru means I'm producing the children so that I can help them go back to Godhead. Means we have the desire to deal with children. We have the desire to work with the wife cooperatively in this way. And the universe is quite, has no dearth of living entities that are looking for an opportunity to take birth. So we can combine all that together to please the Lord. So for the purpose of helping a living entity go back to Godhead, where I can take my desires engage him in the Lord's service in this way, and that living entity can also have the opportunity to go back to Godhead, then it all becomes nice service, everyone is benefited. That is actual parental rasa. That is actual human parents. Because that means they're doing it to take the kids back to Godhead. Otherwise, the animals, just urge comes. It's the season. You know, there are suitable partners available. And the next thing you know, you have a whole lot of kids, you know. And that's it. There was no plan, there's no idea to get them back to Godhead. Just that exchange, that attachment that's there. Right? You see it in all the creatures, you know. That affection is there for the children. And they gain something from that, they're very happy. Like you see, we're just seeing it's bird season now. And then all the doves, you know, they've been making their nests and all these things. And just the other day then, you know, we saw some two older, you know, full-size doves are sitting there. And they're sitting around and looking very happy. And then you look around and then you find that their child has just made it out of the nest. It can just fly. And they're all sitting around and they're looking very happy and everything like this. And then, you know, they come down and concerned. And if it's, you know, flying nicely and encourage it, it gets up to another place. And they take it around and they feed it and all this. And then another few weeks it grows up and then the whole thing's over. That taste has been experienced. So they're also tasting exactly the same thing. That is something that should be understood, is that the taste that the human being gets out of the senses is exactly the same. The taste is the same. There may be some differences in refinement there, but otherwise it's the same. It's the same thing. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending are being tasted by the animals also. You can see. You know, they get upset if you come and bother their children, or, you know, these things. They have the same. Ramayana was written because of this reason, that there were two birds, and a hunter came, and it was just mating season, and they were very happy, absorbed in their you know, conjugal rasa, these two birds, and very happy interacting with each other. And then the hunter shot one of the birds. So then the other bird was, you know, went down on the ground and was there and was lamenting, you know, actually feeling very bad. And the sage, then Valmiki, he could sense this because of his sensitivity. He could see that the feelings that were being experienced by this bird were the same as any mother has for the child. Or for the husband, like this, the same. So because of this, then he cursed the hunter. You know, that, you know, you could have, you know, if someone's on their own, this and that, but why at this moment when they're so absorbed in all these exchanges of emotion, are you shooting the bird? You know, why can't you be a little sensitive, you know? So then, he cursed the bird, and then afterwards that curse kept going through his mind because it was a very special rhythm, the meter. He had never used that before. And then it was revealed to him, and that is the meter which he should use to write the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. That's the anastup, like what the Gita is written in. So that was the first manifestation of the anastup chanda. The eight syllable meter. But the point is the experience is the same. So that is a side thing. Just like the first birth is animal birth, the exchange there is also animal, unless it's according to Dharma. When it's according to Dharma, then you'll actually experience human emotions, human exchange, because that's based on duty. It's a higher principle. Sometimes it's thought that duty is dry, but if duty is done in the proper knowledge, the results of emotional exchange that gives are far beyond just the animal urges that the modes of nature present. Because duty, it doesn't matter what the situation, ideal or not ideal, the emotional platform remains. While the animal animal platform, that experience of emotion, or the sub-emotions, that, if the situation is not ideal, that it's not experienced. Right? The senses, if the situation is right, then they experience. If it's not right, it's difficult. But emotions can always be, no matter what the situation. Space, time, doesn't interfere. So, here is, if one follows the directions given by the Lord, then this is actual purpose of human life. So, the parents understanding this, the first thing the mother does is train the child in proper behavior. How to eat properly, how to sleep properly, how to deal properly, how to dress properly, how to use the toilet properly. But these are all based on some social tradition. And so the intelligent mother trains the child in the social tradition given by the Lord. Because she knows that this tradition is the best for helping one going back to Godhead. Then we see the principles of, so that intimacy, that friendliness is there. Then you get with the father the sense of authority, that sense of that firm friendship, that kind of thing comes in, which will be very valuable as the next stage, which then will take one naturally to the stage of being able to relate with the spiritual teachers, who will simply concentrate on that aspect. So if there's not the common thread of saving the child from death, then you don't have a high quality of parentage going on. The mother, the father, the teachers, the guru, the leaders, if that's not their central focus, then there'll be difficulty and things don't run smoothly. You don't have cooperation, you don't have community. Community means that there is a common purpose, common goal, common values. So when the value is the children should go back to Godhead, then you actually have a commonality amongst everybody in the community. If that's not there, it's not, you won't find it. Because otherwise, if you choose anything else, then how will the parental ras work? At least, minimum, you have to take the physical welfare of the children. Then at least some social interaction can go on. But if that's not there, there's no question of that you can develop community. It's not possible. You find if one checks any community on the planet that's tight, it's because they have common values. That's the one thing. You check any, whether it's Vedic or non-Vedic, the whole community has the same values. Therefore, it's called community. I mean, that's just the meaning of the word. So here is, guru means this. Spiritual master teaches the disciple how to give up materialistic life, and the disciple's duty is to assimilate his instructions and similarly follow the path back home, back to Godhead, from whence no one returns to this material world. So the mother's duty, the father's duty, the teacher's duties, the spiritual master's duties is the same principle. Teaching how to give up materialistic life. The kid is an animal. You have to teach it how to give up that concept and follow God's instructions. Eat with your right hand, not eat with both hands. Put it in the mouth, not smear it all over the whole body. One must teach this. And the reason is these are aspects of going back to Godhead. Because if you want to deal in the society of devotees, you want to interface with the deity, you want to understand the Lord's pastimes, one has to follow that culture. So the mother is teaching this, the father is teaching this, the teacher is teaching, they're all teaching the same thing. But at their levels and in that way that is suitable for the relationship, particular aspect of the parental relationship that they are representing. Like that. So after hearing the instructions of Narad Muni, the Haryasvas, then they understood that their position, they've already done all these things, and they didn't have to absorb themselves in these things to get the realization. Because one has to go back to Godhead, that requires realization. So they got it by hearing. Therefore, Naistika Brahmacharis. They don't get it by hearing. Then they should get it by seeing. And if not, then by going through it oneself. So all these things are work. You know, of course, Prabhupada says, by hearing is first class, seeing is second, by experiencing that's third. But it doesn't matter, because our conditioning is there. Whatever it is, we accept it and we follow that path, first, second, and third. And then we go through it, and then we realize. Then we're in the same position as the Haryasvas. Whether we go from Brahmacharya straight into complete detachment, or whether one has to go through Grihastha ashram like that. So one must understand what is the purpose of these things. Prajapati Daksha is the father, but he is representing the principle of father that goes back to Krishna. And Krishna says the purpose of the material world is go back to Godhead. So then one has to do that from whatever one's position is. The endeavors of the karmi are useless waste of time. One should endeavor to return back home, back to Godhead. That following the culture, but not making the endeavor to go back to Godhead, is a waste of time. Following the culture for the purpose of going back to Godhead, that is useful. And so then one should follow that aspect that fits our nature. Any questions on this? Yes.
He was saying that by following culture, you can experience a happiness or a relationship on an emotional level that is far greater than just essential going for sense gratification. Now, if you're like you said, performing culture, like being culturally situated without the purpose of going back to Godhead, is a waste of time. But if you are situated and performing activities to go back to Godhead, following culture perfectly and relishing this relationship
is it Maya to enjoy that relationship, that sense of enjoying it? It's how you say it. If one makes that the purpose, then it's Maya. Because whatever is the goal, that's what you're dealing with. So if your goal is to enjoy that relationship, you know, whatever it may be, conjugal, parental, friendship, or servitorship like this, in the material platform, then that's Maya. One's purpose is to get to the transcendental platform, but because we have a conditioned nature, we must engage that in Krishna service. I want to interact with my friends. Right? I have that attachment. So now I can either do that for myself or do that for Krishna. But the fruit is Krishna's. So I experience it. It'll make me happy. But it's situated in the proper platform because the goal of it is not, if it doesn't work, if it doesn't adjust this, that, I'm not disturbed. So therefore you can be with friends and take prasad and laugh and joke and have nice relationships and be dependable in the relationship. They have some need, you're there to help, they help you, you know, and depending upon the depth of intimacy or confidentiality, it will be working. But it still has to be in relationship to Krishna. Just on its own, it's useless. That's why the Shastra keeps going back and forth. It's like, it says one should do this, at the same time it says it's useless. And this is probably, you know, is one of the major bewildering aspects, because if you do it without keeping Krishna, it's useless. If you do it with keeping Krishna, then it's wonderful. So just following the Varna ashram, but not keeping Krishna as the center, is the Griha Medhi. And he's a materialist. Keeping Krishna's thunder is a grihastha, right? It's a Sanskrit term. Generally we think, if you're a devotee, you're a grihastha. And if you're not a devotee, you're a grihamedi. But the term is Sanskrit. Pradapati Daksha is following the Vedic culture very nicely. But he's a grihamedi. Because the home is the center. The happiness of the home, the relationship in the home. You know, his sons are supposed to fulfill his duties, his needs, rather than Krishna's duties of helping the children go back to Godhead is his duty. That's a grihastha. Then he was expecting, because generally that's what happens, is most people in the material world need to go through the grihastha ashram. It's you know, most will do that. But he should have been happy. I had a group of kids, all 10,000 of them, right? All like-minded, all like that, of top quality. And they could go back to Godhead without going. He should have been happy. I mean, he's a Prajapati. He'll just have more. I mean, somebody, at least his wife, was a little God-conscious, right? Because the children take on the nature of the boys take on the nature of the mother. So somehow or another, she was a Prajapati in good standing. Right? Because the Prajapatis are supposed to be not interested in sense gratification. That's what Maharloka is for. They're above Indra's planet. They're grihasthas, but for them it's pure duty. The universe has to be populated. The living entities from previous, you know, creation have to have the opportunity to fulfill their desires. So that's their duty, right? So they don't have complete detachment from it, but they don't have attachment for it. So that's what they're doing. So the wife was situated. So we saw two batches of sons were able to be taken back to Godhead, straight going to Naistika Brahmachari. But then he had daughters, so they took on his mentality and everything. He was very satisfied then. So it... Did that answer your question, or did we get too far into the tangent?
No.
So it's a very fine point that you have this, because just following the culture isn't enough. I mean, it comes between following non-Vedic and Vedic, one should follow Vedic. But in Vedic, it has to be followed to please the Lord. If it's followed not to please the Lord, it's still a waste of time. It's a gold chain. But one's still bound to the material world. One has to understand the chain is made of gold. You follow a non-Vedic and it'll be made of iron. And one has to understand it is iron. No one should fool themselves into thinking it's gold. It's iron. But it's still, in either case, you're bound. But the Vedic system lends itself so perfectly to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, because that's where it's come from, right? It has come from. You have the philosophy, and then from that comes the culture that is the manifestation of that. Just like, let's say I have a philosophy, be kind to others. Now if I just talk to philosophy all day, it's very nice, it sounds good, people, it's pleasant, but how do I know that I do it? That'll be seen when I go out and I deal very gently with others. You know, if somebody has needs, I help them, or I give in charity, or, you know, I take part in things that will help others. Then you can go, this is the culture for the person who follows that philosophy. Right? So therefore, the Vedic philosophy has to have a culture in which it's perfectly manifest. So that's the Vedic culture. Then the philosophy and the culture match very nicely. There's no anomalies there. So that's why Krishna recommends it. It's the culture he follows. Right? But it's done for prema, not for just elevation or for other aspects. But it's based on prema. The material world is based on duty. Because by sadhana, we're going to get ourselves back to the platform of prema. So it's perfect. that you can't find anything better. But still, because it is such a sophisticated system, it does take more than 30 seconds to learn it. One has to study it. One has to be taught what it means. That's why Prabhupada is constantly bringing out these points in the purports. All the different cultures, the Bhagavatam's bringing it out. You know, here's a point that the parent is interested in the materialistic development of the child, but the child wants to go back to Godhead. So the child is right in taking that spiritual path and disregarding the materialistic interest of the parents, because that is the higher path. The real mother and father is Krishna. Are biological, they're just in this life. That's all. The only reason that the match was made is because the consciousness is somewhat similar. It's never 100%. Like that.
Yeah. I'm just kind of wondering what the validity of the affection is that we have.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, okay.
It's like Gopishwar Das, he says that the yogin used to say that we're all alone in this world.
Yeah. Means this is what one realizes. Yeah, you were talking about the emotion. See, I only stress this point so much only for one reason. It's because I've seen, at least now, the popular flavor in the movement is devotees are very dissatisfied due to lack of emotional exchange. They have the perfect philosophy. They have the perfect way to engage the senses. But they haven't understood that Prabhupada's culture that he gives in the Bhagavatam and the examples of the Bhagavatam are the perfect culture in which you're going to taste that. And because of that, they're looking around for all kinds of strange and wonderful ways that they're going to actually taste what it means to be a parent, what it means to be a husband or wife, what it means to be a leader or follower. But they don't even know what they're looking for. Because in the Western culture, what the Vedic culture calls the emotional platform, the Western culture calls the spiritual platform. And what the Vedic culture calls extended sense gratification, that is what the modern culture calls emotional platform. Right? What the Vedic culture calls, you know, the platform of sense enjoyment, you know, like that. I mean, the Western culture has that platform, but they follow animalistic sense enjoyment. They don't follow human sense enjoyment. So the whole thing is very different. So when someone has the moments that they're sitting together, there's a very strong exchange for a moment, a flash of, you know, between the husband and wife of a strong bonding, it's mistaken for as something spiritual. But that is the platform that the Vedic system runs on 24 hours a day. That's just that platform. That's what makes the marriage works, because that is being experienced all the time. While in the modern culture, it's a flash here and there, you know? You get it in a few lines or a few paragraphs in a novel here and there, in a movie for a moment or two. And that's it, you know, a fraction here and there. And then because it's so strong, it keeps one going with the hope, maybe. But the Vedic culture is, this is there to get rid of that need of the conditioned living entity. Now let's talk about the real platform of exchange, the spiritual platform. If you think this is great, what about that? You know, like we are eating Western food, you know, nice boiled carrots, you know, with a little salt and black pepper on it. And then we come across prasad, right? So now if prasad is so much of a higher, finer taste, so then why will not be the emotional and the spiritual platform? But one has to have faith. And as far as I see, when it comes to philosophy, faith is pretty strong. Okay, we got to control the senses, it's strong. But it's still not very strong in what the emotional platform works. Devotees don't believe that it'll work. They don't believe if a husband acts like this, a wife acts like this, that there'll be exchange. Because their thing is, well, unless it's free, how will it be exchange? But free means my senses, and the other person's senses. All the freeness means I let you do what you like, you let me do what I like. And that's it. That's the exchange. And in that, if you look, like you said there, you're alone. There's no exchange. It's thought to be exchanged. That's why Prabhupada says, in the modern marriages, when the sex doesn't go great, it falls apart. Because they were never actually, they never actually bonded, these people. Just all that was there is the remembrance of the sense. And this person is the one who I can engage my senses how I feel satisfied. But actually, the relationship between them never actually happened. Therefore, it breaks up. There's something very deep how it'll break up. So they never experienced. That's the problem in the Western culture, especially first world. Practically speaking, no one's experienced the emotional platform. You know, there's momentary euphoric moments in that, and they're so, you know, rare. But that's the platform that is talked about. It's just husband and wife act together in the proper way. That's what they'll experience. That will then remove all these strong desires for that kind of emotional exchange. Because but at the same time, if you only go for that, that's Maya. That's Maya. Right? But you have to understand is that's just the platform of Manamaya. And that's nothing great at all. Then beyond that, this is like a drop compared to the ocean of happiness that is there in understanding the Brahman platform. That means just no material attachment. And then that is like a fraction of a portion of the shoreless ocean. The shoreless ocean of happiness found in the spiritual platform. So one understands it's so powerful, but there's something way beyond. Right? Otherwise, the tendency of the living end is just get attached to the senses. So that's deflected up that you have to deal socially, so it should be based on the emotional platform. Right? Emotions here is, we're not talking just the movement of hormones, or the sudden rise of anger or happiness or this or that. That's why Krishna in the Gita says, don't be disturbed by these. We're talking about a bonding, you know, between persons, like that. It's a little different. It's a little different. So that will be experienced. Just like when you experience the emotional platform, the senses are automatically taken care of. I've given the example before. The mother and the child are experiencing that exchange. In that, then that's expressed through the mother cooks something for the child, feeds them, pats them on the head, dresses them. So the senses are being engaged, but that's secondary. That's secondary to the main mood of the exchange between the parent and the child. You know? Means the feeling of the exchange when it comes to eating is experienced for hours while the mother is preparing it, while the child knows that the mother is preparing these things. But the actual senses, it's only a few minutes. And during the senses, there's no connection between the child and the parent. It's simply the tongue and the thing that goes on the tongue. The parent is actually out of it. But the mind sees that this is a representative of the mother's affection. Therefore, you connect it. So the mind experiences, the senses don't. You know, the modern cultures put all the emphasis on the sense, and then when that doesn't work, then there's no relationship with the mother. But it's a different thing. So that goes on for hours, and then you can remember that. And it purges itself. So now, in that, there must be the higher, the spiritual. Is that in the spiritual, naturally these lower ones are taken care of, as long as you follow the culture. So that's why there's such a difficulty in establishing community. Because philosophy is there, senses are there, but what's in between? And if you look at what's in between, that's what is being presented that everybody is looking for. Right? They want to see community, they want to see family relationships go nicely. If you say anything that breaks or would appear, you know, that would be against the family going on nicely, you know, like Narad Muni and the sons, then immediately the mood is that of daksha. Hey, you're getting in the way, you sannyasis, you brahmacharis, you messed us all up for all these years. No. Philosophy is philosophy. But if we don't accept the Vedic principles of how to exchange between husband and wife, the sannyasi is not getting in the way of that. He's not sitting in your house and say, okay, now look over at your wife, and then now you look at her and tell her, you know, I'm really, you know, I really feel, how you say, you know, something to give that exchange. You know, gratefulness that's there, the wife's event. Are they sitting there saying, now say this, or don't say that? They're not there. It's being spoken in the class, and then someone walks away. And then what they do with it the next 23 hours, that they have to take responsibility for. It's very nice to blame it on someone else, but it's you know, it's very, very hard if you look at it realistically, right? The modern things, be real realistic, down to earth. The real realistic is that we're not accepting, we don't have faith. We don't have faith if the husband behaves in this way, things will go nice. The wife behaves in this way, things will go nice. There's no faith. Because as soon as you say, do this, and there, this or that, or, oh, another one of those, something like that. Yes?
Sorry. I agree
with
100%, but at some point I want to maybe some questions. You said that sannyasi just speak philosophy, but we also can hear that, like you presenting philosophy and presenting how important is this feeling.
Huh.
And you can also present philosophy such way that somebody can neglect or not properly present.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course.
Because I think, like now, you of course you're right, that for example, household is responsible for home life. But it often happens that leaders, very often in different ashrams, maybe brahmachari, grihastha, sannyasi, they present the philosophy such way that they also twisted our culture.
That's it. But at the same time, they just didn't understand. But at the same time, you know, everybody has a responsibility. Just like I'll give an example. You have the wild 80s, where there's a very strong power structure, right? Now, the parents are heavy. Husbands are heavy with the wives. Wives are heavy with the husbands. Parents are heavy with the children. Leaders are heavy with the families, you know. Then those kids are sent to the Gurukul, right? The teachers are also strong. But in this whole thing, who is going to get the rap? Only the teachers. Right? You look back, only the teachers will be blamed. No one else will be blamed. And what is it? What will be the word said? It's the same thing that was said at Nuremberg. You may have been given the order to deal like this, but you are an individual and you have your own consciousness, and why didn't you act according to it? So why don't those parents, why don't they also act according to it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so the point is...
Say that everyone...
No, I'm not saying this to you, I'm saying this in general. The point is that everybody has to take responsibility themselves. We can't use double speak. Even the Karmis figured this out in the book 1984. You know, it came out back in the 50s. Is this doublespeak where I have one thing for someone else? Liberality for one person and fascism for another. It means it's liberal for me and fascist for everybody else. It can't work socially. And that's what we're dealing with today. The actual fact is that. And as long as that's there, you can't have community. Cannot absolutely have it. And since community is the order of the day, then devotees should be realistic what creates community. It's not this. It's a matter of everybody understanding the position and acting according to it. So what you're saying is there. It's a big influence, big influence. And if the leaders aren't presenting nicely, but at the same time each individual has. Otherwise, if we want to say, no, it's purely the leaders, then we should leave everybody else down below that alone. That's there.
Society as whole is
taking
responsibility. So not only Grihastha.
No, everybody
everyone,
has to.
We can say same or more, but everyone is taking responsibility.
Yeah, because the grihastha will have not well have at one time not have been a grihastha, no, been a student. So it's the leaders of the community had to train them so they would be proper grihasthas, like that. So it's just a problem in creating the first, you know, solid platform. And once it's created, it'll naturally generate its next. But you have to start with the leaders. That's what Prabhupada said. First we create a class of Brahmins. Then from that we can create the whole Varnashram. But to create a class of Brahmins, first you have to create individuals who can follow the system. Right? So even though it comes from the top down, you create the top by starting at the bottom. Right? The student is the next top. So if he's not created properly, then you won't have a class of Brahmins like that. So it both are there. The balance is always there, like that. As far as the Vedas goes this way, it goes that way. As far as it's harsh on these things, it's gentle on these things. But generally the devotees, because of the, you know, the Western background of power and money, then they don't see the gentle side, because it's not there. You know, it's not there. I mean, you used to sell things in the 50s on emotion. You know, I think you can still sell baby diapers by emotion. But everything else you got to sell by just, you know, money, power, sex, like this. Like that. It's just, it's not used or experienced at all. No one buys it. You know? It's coming a little popular nowadays. You know, it's starting to come back into vogue. A little, a touch of emotion in the reality. It's okay. But, you know. So, yeah, your point is right. Is everybody, see, the Vedic thing is everybody has to take the responsibility. Of course, the main is on the leaders. But then we have to see that that is done. Because otherwise, I've seen also in the community, the reality is someone, you know, you have someone who's a leader. They're a leader in the community, and they're heavy and all these things, and responsible for all the kind of evils and ills that we talk about. Next, they lose their position and not in that position of authority anymore, and they're just one of everybody. And then after a while, they get the confidence back, they get their, you know, they have, you know, some understanding and everything in that, and then again they're leading. So the whole thing is when you have a community, especially like this, where you have so many senior devotees coming from all around the world, you know, most of these devotees were presidents, were regional secretaries, GBCs, sannyasis, from someplace else. So all the things they come and say, well, here, this and that, and so many things, they were also the same place. You go back, check the history. You know? Hundreds of disenfranchised devotees that will feel that it's because of this person I am not practicing Krishna consciousness today. Like that. So then we should look at it as a whole, like you said, and realize, okay, we've made mistakes, we've done that, where to start from now. And this whole thing of trying to find who's to blame, useless. It'll go on forever. Yeah, everyone has their opinion. But you have to start, okay, what can I do? And how can we try to develop it? Like that. Then it becomes work. Because the Vedic system is be honest. Right? The difficulty in applying the Vedic system is it's hard to be honest. You know? Because everyone's really worried that they're not going to be a Brahmin. That's the first thing. Okay, Kshatriyas are okay, Vaishyas is okay, but Shudras, forget it. You know? Like that. So it becomes very, generally the ashrams are accepted pretty much. But even then there's, you know, what do you call it? The relationships are not good. Relationships are very bad. Like that. You know, like at present, you have who know the culture but aren't really well trained in Brahmacharya, but know the culture. And then they speak bad about the grihasthas who don't know the culture and, you know, move around like elephants in a lotus pond. And then the grihasthas, then they go, what are all these guys, you know, these unmarried, you know, bachelors in saffron? So even there, it's not going to work. It can't function. Because one has to understand what is the system and understand where you are. Okay, I'm situated best as a grihastha, but I am untrained. Like that, how to get trained. They are brahmacharis, but brahmachari doesn't mean they're not going to get married. It just means now they're training. And after training, they'll either get married or not. So how to train them as brahmacharis? If I'm saying everybody is going to get married, then I better prepare them for that. Otherwise, I'm not honest. In the saying, why don't they be honest and get married? Why don't I be honest and see that they're trained? Otherwise, you know, what's the meaning? Because who was training the brahmacharis? The grihasthas. Right? In general, the gurukul is run by a grihastha. He's training the next generations, whether they'll be naistika or not. He could train both. The same training to make somebody a naistika brahmachari is the same training to make somebody a good grihastha, and vice versa. Because the point is you have to understand the reality of what it means to deal in the grihastha ashram. So then for some person, he understands, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. And another person just goes, well, I can't get involved in that. And so from the same training, you automatically just split the brahmacharis into naistika and upakurvana. Automatically. Then, once they've made that decision and they're mature enough, then you train them in the technical little details, you know, the fine little things. And then the grihasthas train those brahmacharis, and then others, then they train the naistikas. But the main framework, fundamental, is the same training. It's training. You have to know what is man, what is mentality, what is his strengths, weaknesses, what is woman, what is strengths and weaknesses. How do they relate? Right? How do you make them interface? On what platforms? And that training, then the person who doesn't know, he decides, well, I guess, you know, marriage isn't so bad. You know, they can relate to it. And others, they can understand it and just can't relate to it. So then one gets married, one doesn't. So the Haryasvas, then, they were like that. They heard, and then they decided, I'll go this way. But until they do, the Brahmacharis, point is it's not like this. It's not that the Brahmacharis are write-offs, sannyasis are write-offs, you know, the leaders are all write-offs, and the grihasthas are like A1 first class. No, we have to understand is that, you know, the whole thing is a write-off. You know? And that we have to somehow or another figure out how to make it good, right? We learn from our mistakes, right? We learn from our mistakes. So now let's look at it. What's good? What worked? What is actually functioning? And then bring that out. And then it develops. And then you have something very nice. But if we just sit around and backbite and all this, I can go on forever. That's what the material world's for, right? That's called creamy bojan, right? Just, you know, each one eats each other and everything like that. You know, that when we work and we see, right, means it should be that someone has successfully run their ashram nicely, grown up, you know, the children, especially when they come to the platform that they have grandchildren. That means they know, like in Manasamhita says, one has grown up. The children have grown up, and once these grandchildren, and the skin is wrinkled, the hair is going white, it says now it's time to seriously think about heading to the forest. Right? So this means they've gone through the whole thing. So that's experienced. So someone who can do that, that should be very respectable. Right? But you don't generally hear that. You know, even amongst the grihasthas, there's no real respect for those who have been able to actually hold a marriage together. Like that should be seen. What is it that they did? Right? Yeah. So marriages fall apart for simple reasons. So it must be some simple reasons to keep it together. You know, like that. So it's not that difficult. And then you look at that, cultivate. Okay, what's that? Then what is it that then has to be, you know, trained? Then you'll see. There's some self-control. There's some, you know, leadership ability, there's the proper attitudes and all these things. So that should be seen that in its original form, not in a modern form, but in the original form, the brahmacharis are trained. Right? They're trained in knowledge. They're trained in self-control, respect. Right? If you can't respect superiors, you can't respect a wife. Right? And if a wife can't respect superiors, she can't respect a husband. There has to be respect. Husband has to respect the wife because she's Dharma Patni. She's fixed in Dharma. She's always in anxiety about that being done. That has to be respected. At the same time, as man, you know, is fixed in the scriptures and in that understanding, wife has to respect that. So they have a common respect, right? Good friends, there's something they respect about each other. You know? They have something that they respect and they find is valuable in the association. So there's no respect. You don't have a marriage. So if they didn't learn that respect when they're young, how are they going to suddenly, I mean, just you exchange garlands and suddenly you become realized or what? You know? So, I mean, I know we, you know, what is it? Marriages are made in heaven and the magic and all that. But we have to know what's the limit of the magic. So then when that respect is there, then it works. Then when respect is there, sensitivity is there. And when sensitivity is there, then you actually care for the individual. So the modern culture is not based on respect. Right? As it is now, a new bhakta can shoot off their mouth at a GBC, sannyasi, senior devotee. No one says boo. It's perfectly all right. So now this person can grow up and actually be a good grihastha? They can actually grow up and be a leader in the community? No. Not possible. Will not be possible. Anyone who knows leadership, I mean really knows it, leadership management, knows that the best persons who are going to be able to do something in management are the ones who are respectful. And they got brains. Guys that don't respect anybody, even though they're very qualified, are not taken seriously. But they have respect. Because if they respect those above, they'll get respect from below. That's a leader. Because that means an emperor means he has the greatest respect for what's above him. Therefore, he can be respected by a whole planet. Right? A king means he has quite a good respect, but he can only be respected by his kingdom only, not by the world. You know, and then on down, just like this. So the father is respected because he respects what's above him, therefore his children will respect, or his wife will respect. Because the wife respects the husband, therefore the children respect her. So it's such an integral part, but it's very easily just left. So when you want to train brahmacharis, you have to train them in respect. Not that you get out, you know, some nice manual and say, okay, here's a grihastha manual, and you got, no. First learn that, sense control. Right? No woman can respect a man if he's not sense controlled. Right? They can't. Otherwise, what's the meaning? Maybe fun, but there's no respect. So they have to be sense controlled. They have to be respectful to others. They have to know the scriptures. Otherwise, what's the use? Right? Otherwise, how are you going to be sense-controlled and no respect unless you know what's the standard? And that comes from Shastra. Right? You have to be clean. Because if the external is clean, it's very easy to make the internal clean. If the internal is clean, then you can make the children's internal clean. And one must have a good service attitude. One doesn't have a good service attitude, how will anything work? How will grihastha ashram work? Husband doesn't want to go out and make any money. Wife doesn't want to take care of the house. You know, but the husband expects to come home to a wonderful house. You know, he's not willing to give any money to buy anything for it. And the wife thinks, you know, I don't know what she thinks. She wants all these different things, but she doesn't want to take care. So if there's no good service attitude, then how will it work? So you train the brahmacharya in those five things. Then you either have a good leader, you know, a good, you know, teacher, a good businessman, a good husband, good wife, all that. Because everything is founded on that. Everything. So that's why if you use Krishna's system, you end up with excellence. If we use some modern system, we might fall short because these principles aren't talked about. Right? They're not talked about. But that's what the Vedic culture is. Yes, go ahead.
Sometimes there's three monks on the other side. This is all temporary.
But they should have thought of that before they got married. Like that. If they had thought of that then it would have been perfect. But you know, don't have the children and not take care. Point is that's why in the Vedic culture it's very serious. In the marriage, it's very amazing. In the marriage, so many of the mantras are just dealing with the children. The wife's health will be good, she'll be protected. And it's very interesting, I was discussing with Prahlad yesterday, is the in the marriage, it doesn't say, don't let my wife's children die. Right? It says, don't let my wife suffer the emotional distress of losing a child. It's a totally different platform. Right? One is just the animal instinct of you've lost a child. The other is the emotional platform that the distress the mother will go through in losing the child. So you're dealing with the woman on a totally different level. The one is just on the sensual level, the other is on the emotional level. So therefore then you protect all the different parts of her body and this and that. And it sometimes seems a little weird, you know, you have a mantra there, you know, with this mantra we protect your two breasts, with this, that. But in the Vedic culture is that this is all part of just the whole emotional exchange and motherhood and all these different things. So if that's not taken care of, then how will she experience this? How will she be satisfied? So it's a totally different level. And so much of it is for that. So it's just they're dealing on a different platform. So is that if one doesn't want to get involved, so therefore having children means, you know, you have at least some years of commitment. At least serious up to the point they can, if it's a boy, they can go to the Gurukul. I mean, full time. Once they go to the Gurukul, then that moral support is there. And then when they come out of the Gurukul, then you have to help them get situated in their life. So again, it will come up. But it'll be on a different platform. Now you're dealing with a mature adult and all this. But if not in the girl, then you're putting in your commitment until she's married. So that has to be thought about before the conception. Then you actually have the weight. And then someone who can think like that then actually can take care like that. But someone who doesn't worry about that, oh, Krishna will take care. Well, then how is it that we're having the child? Because we didn't have the child on Krishna's system. You know, plan this, that. We just had it based on the modes of nature system. You know? So that's actually not human platform. You know? So it's a very good point. Is it, parents have to know it's not Maya, but one has to understand is the emotional platform is used to bring them to the spiritual. You know, the child needs lots of attention. You give that attention, but in that attention you give Krishna, right? You know, you do all these things, you're with them, go for a walk, do things, but you chant japa together, you do this together, something, you have something, you somehow know they get Krishna in there. So that's the expertise. You're just like the spiritual master has to figure out how to say it in such a way that the disciple takes it, you know? And the parents have to do the same thing. The difference is that with the spiritual master, there's been the conscious idea from the student that they want to learn it. The conscious commitment. But with the parents, it's unconscious. They have to somehow or another get it in, even though the kid doesn't know what's going on. And slowly try to cultivate that they do come to the platform of being conscious. Like that. That's there. They put in that part. The subconscious state. Then when the teacher gets, then you have something to work with. And then they take it to the conscious state. Then they can go out and work in the society, you know, work with the parents, work with the community, work with... Because the foundation of the subconscious has been made conscious. Done. So it's very hard for the teacher to put in the subconscious, because that starts from the beginning. And it's very hard for the parent to put in the conscious, because the child at home is just, you know, takes everything for granted, you know. Just automatically there's food on the table and there's a place to sleep, and now they don't think of what the parents go through to get that. No concept. So you send them to the teacher, and the teacher, then it's like they're in a different atmosphere, and then they understand, oh, there's some process here. You know, clothes get washed by sticking them in a bucket with soap and, you know, going like this and rinsing them out. I never knew that, you know. You know, because they have to do it themselves. Then they realize what my mother did for me. That's why many times it's thought if the kid goes to the Gurukul, the relationship with the parents will decrease, not increases. Because then, properly done, if the rasa in the Gurukul is parental also, because it enhances each other, and then the child understands what the parents have given, what they've done, like that, you know, then that gratefulness increases, that respect for the parents increases, like that. So it's there. Also in the with the family, then that proper thing is there. They respect the king, you know. And then that king taking care, then they also their family. Everything. It's all connected. It's one rasa. It's just its various manifestations. You know? So. Yes.
You said that a telephone operator gets more training than what a married person gets. Entering into a 25 commitment, what it should be a minimum 25-year commitment, whereas a telephone operator, you need to know how to talk, and you can operate a telephone.
How many hours do they get? How many hours do they get training?
1 hour.
1 hour?
Very little.
Yeah, I guess that is more, isn't it? You know, basically our training is, you know, watch out for the rocks.
Right. So there's also a saying that they have in England in the Vaishnava training and education department is that training solves problems. Mm. And I've been on the road like a whole other state with respect. Mm. But there's no real training in our society apart from the group rules that are
to say, because basically the main training would be the community itself would do. But the problem is the community itself has so many different ideas that creates the problem. You know, you can do it from outside, but there's not a trust that someone who's not in the ashram knows what's going on there. You know? Because the point is that the principles are very easy to understand.
So would it not be a better time to train when
that's the best. That and before them. That means before they become brahmacharis, and then after when they go from brahmachari before they're married. You know, that's what can be done in the house. Then in between, that's done in the school. So there's like three phases there. And then after marriage, then that continues on. Is that the, you know, the friends and leaders of the community have to train. So it's a very, in other words, you see, it's a social thing. It's a whole, the Vedic thing is all based on this training. So the boy has to be sensitive to know, girl, she has her conditioned nature, how to help her engage that in Krishna's service. So whatever is needed in the mentalities and facilities and all that, then try to work out what is useful and what is, you know, maya. And then see that that is gotten to the best ability. And the wife and the husband, she sees what is the needs and tries to take care of that if it's not maya. And if it's according to Dharma. And that, so that if that's not there, then you have to respect the other person as an individual, that they have their needs to get back to Godhead. Like that. And then there's no problem. There's no problem. There's no. And the two don't go against each other. I just saw a very interesting example of this was in Vrindavan about 2 years ago. Gopi Puranadana was giving the class. And then while he's giving the class, then, you know, I think his kid was, you know, like that kind of big enough to move around and make noises. And I don't know if it could talk, yeah, but whatever. It came, you know, crawling through the crowd and walking here and there, and finally comes up to, you know, Baba's there giving class, but, you know, what does a kid know about Bhagavatam and this and that? So he just comes up and, you know, just starts crawling onto the asan, like that. So Gopi didn't like, you know, get out of here and all this and that and stuff like that. He just, you know, the kid was just coming, just wanted to be there, took him, you know, sat him on his lap and just continued with the class. Like that. So the class wasn't compromised and the relationship with the kid wasn't. You know? And the kid, after a few minutes, they're restless and they get up and then they go off again. You know? But but there was no distraction. You know, it's not that he stopped the class, looked at the kid, took care of that, you know, told everyone, hey, you know, I am the grasa, I have to take care of my kids, so give me some space. No, he just, as he's talking and all, he just knows the kid and just grabbed the kid. So he wouldn't, you know, crawl somewhere else. And then stalking and this and that, when the kid gets restless and moves, and he lets him go and he goes off. But it's like, they're not incompatible. Because the whole Vedic system is how to get back to Godhead. So the Grihastha Ashram is one of the aspects how someone can get back to Godhead. If they have that conditioning, that's the system to get rid of it and go back to Godhead. So it's all meant for going back to Godhead. So if one sees it in that way, then one can use it. And then one can start to distinguish, well, what things in the Grihastha Ashram are favorable, what are not. Just like in the Brahmacharya, what's favorable and not. Like that. So, you know, in all these different things, what's favorable and not. One has to know. Because one has to know what's the moves. That's the essential point. Like that. If one understands that, then it works.
So the training has to be there before one enters into the
instruction. Yeah, that's best.
What would you say about somebody who hasn't really, who's only done about, say, 2 or 3 years of brahmacharya life, and then they go into the Vyasa?
Depends how serious they are. Means, you know, that's always, something's better than nothing. Because we can always continue that as a grihastha. Because the grihastha, one of the businesses of a brahman is, brahman is that they continue study. So devotees are brahmins by culture, maybe not by occupation. Because the culture goes with the consciousness. Right? The brahminical consciousness creates the brahminical culture. So the Brahman is interested in Brahman, in higher elevation. So every devotee follows the Brahminical culture. Though the conditioned nature of their body, their mind, their intelligence, then is suited to a particular occupation. So they'll follow the occupation of that. So one may do Vaishya or Shudra or anything. But the culture is there. So then the Brahman is supposed to continue studying as a Grihastha. So therefore he studies, he satsang, associates with others, like that. And in that, then they share their experience and the whole process goes on. Because whatever is there in brahmacharya, then that continues. Like that. Like you'll see what it's explained in the Dharma Shastra for the brahmachari, this general rule, foundational rule, it's not explained again for the grihasthas and everybody else. But everything is based on that. Then there's certain rules that are for the grihastha. Those that belong to everybody else aren't explained for them. So there's certain principles that are just there, you don't. So when they can continue that. They can continue that training. So even though it may have been short, but those principles they have learned, then they can continue, build on that.
So they did some social studies in England trying to stamp out crime and whatnot. And one statistic that they came up with is that poverty actually brings the worst out of people. So sometimes when a devotee, especially the man, he gives, say, 10 or 10 years or 5 years of his life to being a brahmachari. So he misses out on the economic development sphere of his life, and then when he does get married, he finds himself in a situation where he has to earn money for his wife and children. And quite often they end up in a relatively poverty-stricken position, and then that brings the worst out of them. And also contributes to quite often breaking up with the relationship. Mm. Prabhupada mentions that the poverty, you know, destroys all good qualities. Now there's different. Where you're seeing it, called three different aspects there, you know. And then this last one you're bringing up is the training. Is the one is poverty is the condition of the mind. You know, you can have somebody with nothing, and he's, you know, it's like I would say. You know, it's the grihastha, he has his place. The sannyasi, the whole world is his. You know, he can sleep under any tree, the stars are his cover, you know, the earth is his bed. I mean, it's like everything, you know. So it's a matter of the mentality, you know. Very much the mentality that is there on whether you're rich or poor. Because a Brahmin before, like Sudama Brahmin, he wasn't poor. In his mind, he's satisfied. He has whatever he needs. You know, but his wife, due to anxiety, was saying he's getting thin, this, that, he should have a little bit more. You know, it's her duty to take care. So she said, you go and, you know, beg something from Krishna. But otherwise, he was not poor. Therefore, when he got money, he was still the same richness. The externals changed, but he was the same. But now the difficulty comes is if one doesn't have money and one feels poor, when Krishna gives money, you think you're rich. And then one falls down. Therefore, Krishna doesn't give money. It means the whole universe, all the universe belong to Krishna. It says in the Shastras that everything belongs to the Brahmins. The whole world belongs to the Brahmins. But Krishna doesn't give it to them if they're going to fall down.
Right? He could give Bali Maharaj. He took everything away because he was materialistic. But when he surrendered everything, then he gave him more than what Indra had. He wanted the seat of Indra. But he got more than that when he surrendered. So if devotees don't have money, generally it's because if Krishna gave it to them, they wouldn't be able to maintain the Krishna consciousness. So poverty is a mentality like that. You have nothing. If you don't think you're poor, you know, this is all I need. And like you see, all these great Brahmins and stuff, Grihasthas and all that. The king comes to them and says, you know, I can give you money, I can give you this. And they say, no, you know, it's fine. You know, I go out and I beg a little rice like that on that tamarind tree over there. Then my wife takes a few leaves and boils them in the rice. So it gives it a little flavor. I eat that, I'm satisfied. No, but I could give you so many things, land, cows. No, I don't need, you know. Because, you know, for me, you know, the study, all that is my main wealth. And so if I get material wealth, I got to put all my attention into that. I lose my real wealth, my detachment, my knowledge, my jnana and vairag, I'll lose. So it's just a matter of what one considers as wealth. Then one is rich or poor, like that. So that was one. Then another one, let's see. Another one is that person going through this, then based on your principle, is they're doing without knowledge, then they should have in 15 years been able to educate themselves of what things mean. Especially, see, if they come young, that's one thing. If they come older, they know in the material world, if you want to have things, you need money. Like that. So they should have seen, is this lifestyle for me? You know? Because it's either I'm going to go through this and then either remain a brahmacharya or get married and live the simple life of a Brahmin. And whatever little bit comes from my service, I'm satisfied. Otherwise, then they shouldn't have picked that path and then blame others. Three, then it comes back to, you know, and that can be a lot to do with Giri Govardhan mentioned about the leaders training and not slanting things in the wrong way, so you actually understand. And the third is the sense of the community. You know, is the community helping others get involved and stuff like that? Someone's expert in, like in Chopati in Bombay. Someone needs a house in the community. So the person in the community that deals with land and knows how to, you know, go out there like a shark and get it, they go out and do the deal. You have to pay, but they'll go out and do that for you. You know, and someone else who knows other aspects, they'll help with that. You know, they just help each other. You know, so that has to be established. That the grihasthas themselves don't help each other. You know, like you have a woman loses her husband. Do the others pitch in and, you know, put in, you know, 5, 10, 15, 50 rupees, 100 rupees a month, and she can maintain? No, she's on her own. Right? Nobody thinks like that. At the same time, is then in the same breath and will say, I did 15 years and what do I got for it, you know? So there has to be consistency. Because like I said before, same people who are saying, you know, what did I get? They were sitting in the seat of power that so many others didn't get. And now they've just gotten the taste of their own, you know, how you say, arrangements or management. In many cases, not all cases. And like that. Then the training, then one knows what you brought up, is that you understand your position. You understand what is the position of grihastha, understand your own. If you're going to have anxieties about having facilities in the future, then one should keep one's training very short. And one should concentrate on that, because that is the main value to you. Because at the end of the day, that's what happens. You got married and not be a grihastha, a brahmacharya. So therefore, one should not lose that side. Otherwise, one will be frustrated, because one has to take care of that. And if one sees that that's not what I'm interested in, then he'll go the other way. So then leaders can encourage, okay, take some gap between high school and university, take a year, you know, or take some time. You know that, if you see it's nice, continue a little more. If not, go back to school. When you finish, got your degree, then then you can check then before you get into the job or this or that, or, you know, so many different ways it can be arranged. But the person himself also, because if he says, I did 15 years, what would I get for it? That means this 15 years wasn't being done for Krishna. It was fruit of activity. It was sakam. It wasn't nishkam. Because nishkam means it's for Krishna, the fruit's Krishna's. I am Krishna's. If Krishna wants to take care, I'm taking care. If he doesn't, I don't. Doesn't mean it won't be hard, difficult. Didn't mean that the Pandavas didn't have difficulties. They had a lot of difficulties. But because of that, then they became great, you know, glorified. But if I'm worried that I want to take some of that responsibility, you know, that then I should work in that direction and gear myself in that direction. You know, I should shorten my training.
Actually, they were introducing something like that. You pointed out before the devotees join the temple full time, they kind of chart out their whole life ahead of them, saying this is what could happen, and we'll give you 2 to 3 years training, and if you want to, you can extend it to 5 years after that. If you extend it any longer than that, then you have to bear this in mind, you have to bear that in mind, you have this in mind, you have that in mind.
In the Vedic, that won't happen because it's understood the educational system is a Brahminical system. And Brahmins aren't, it's not their business to organize your facility. No way, not, unless you're a Shudra for them. You're one of their Shudras. You work in their field. Then it's their business to see that you have a place to stay and you're fed. But if you're not the Brahmin Shudra, then it's not their business at all. So they train you. And then after that, you go out and use it. And then it's the community that's supposed to situate you. Now, if we took the flavor that Prabhupada wanted, is that we're training a class of Brahmins, and the thrust is on Brahminical culture, education, teaching, preaching, then no one could expect that. But they naturally, subconsciously expect it because we've taken the paradigm of the thrust is power and money. We've taken the paradigm of the Kshatriya and Vaishya. Therefore, we expect the temple is going to arrange because that's what the Kshatriya does. The whole thing of doing it has all been power-based rather than education or knowledge-based. So it's natural, subconsciously, even someone doesn't understand the Vedic culture that that's what's supposed to happen. They just naturally do it because we've been in more Vedic culture than we have not, you know. Except for birth here, now, at this time. All over the universe, they all follow Vedic culture. You know, and the rest of the time on this planet, they follow Vedic culture. So our experience is more that. So just subconsciously, we expect that the leaders in that kind of position are going to create the facility for us. You know, either create the facility that we can get it ourselves, if we're Vaishyas or other Kshatriya, like that, or actually give it to us if we're Shudras. So if it's understood it's a Brahminical training and experience, then those who are not Brahmins won't expect to get it from there. And if they are Brahmins, then either they'll, you know, fit in a little bit here and there, you know, and be satisfied with that, or if they need more, then they understand and they'll get it outside.
Didn't Prabhupada say that he wanted one of the purposes of his coming was to train up Brahmins and Kshatriyas?
Yeah. But then, Kshatriya means shelter. Kshatriya means shelter, not management. A Shudra can manage. Depends how they're trained. Depends on the situation that that particular community or temple is running. You know? If you have a community, then you can expect it more. But if you have just a temple, you can't expect that. Like that. Because the practical training of the kshatriya, it means the bulk of the part of the practical training of a kshatriya, all of the training of a vaishya, and a lot of the training of the shudra, you can't get in the gurukul. But the brahman only gets everything in the gurukul. Because management, you have to learn from a manager, business from a businessman, art from an artist. It's not theoretical. You have theories behind it that you can learn in the gurukul, but the practical you can't. You know, but in the gurukul they're teaching, they're doing the puja, they're preaching, so you get your practical in there as a brahmin. So if the system's understood, then no one can you know, feel bad that they're not getting what they expected. I think we should end here. Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai Nitai Gaura Premada.